Blog Talk Radio.
Word, biblios, many books, sinking through the ages, ageless, timeless, prophets, apostles, epistles, the gospel, the righteous, the hostile, the woeful, the wonderful.
On the Sabbath days or on Sundays, it's easy to find me. It's most likely up in your churches where I might be. It's millions over this earth who would tell you that they like me. But realistically, half of them take what I say lightly.
Yo, they just push me off the table like they don't need me. Look me in my face like they don't see me. What? Granny's off the church and she won't leave me. Then she comes home from church, but she won't read me.
My name, King James Version. Born in 1611, I was made to teach brethren how to reach the kingdom of heaven. I might not be saying the same thing as your reverend, but football was broke, but it ain't the way it's living.
You probably catch me at your grandma's house, open the Psalms. I was like your grandpa's spouse over in Arm. You catch me in a small jailhouse over in Guam. I speak about the hotel from nowhere to come.
Now travel through my pages, learn about the ancients. Life and death is in me, but some don't wanna hear me. Misuse me to conquer many lands. Many men have been slaves for who I am, the saints. Blood on their hands.
Governments attempted to get rid of me and still trying. Society refused to listen to me and still dying. I give counsel to disciples on his field grind to remind them that the place they want to be is still dying.
Yo, I'm a bookshelf missionary. I could school the school books plus Dr. Seuss in the dictionary. What's written is power, I'm sitting in the parlor. I'm the only book closed, but I open at any hour.
It's always a nappy head kid with a gold tooth, with his hand on my head saying he swear to tell the whole truth.
Yo, dude, they got me on a show called Dusty. Living godly is a must, but don't nobody trust me.
I teach about the old trails, mortars the bomb, seven plagues, seven seals, vultures the swarm, rage in the field, soldiers, storms, the Cummins, the horns, you've been warned.
A lot of preachers want me on their team just to make a profit, when all I want to do is give you words of the sacred prophets, so my creators can see believers making progress. I warn them of the dangers and loving material objects.
Open me up, pray to the God of all men, the God of Jacob, Isaac, the God of Abraham. May he open up his plan, why he came as a man. God 12 and spread his truth to every nation through the land.
Yo, we kicked it, you was once sober, but you won't show my name, cause when your friends came, you keep turning my front over. What's this on my back? Use me as a cup coaster. Come closer, let me do my job like I'm supposed
Yo,
to.
Yo, there's 66 books in me, good and plenty. But up north, they rip out pages to puff sensey. But the saints study intensely, cause there's riches in me. But to the wicked, I ain't worth a
penny. And you can run around wildin', looking in the sky. Or you can read me, choose life or die. Who's right but I, man, a tooth for an eye. The water's broke loose, now the fire's gonna fry.
I'm the Bible.
I'm the Bible. I hold the keys to survival. I'm here to strengthen God's saints, and the water's vital.
I'm the Bible.
I'm the Bible. I'm telling you, stop serving these idols. Ain't no other God, the Lord holding that title.
I'm the Bible.
I'm the Bible. Original holy scrolls, comfort lonely souls with the oracles of the moral code.
I'm the Bible.
I'm the Bible. I'm trying to save many men, but any who pretend his kingdom, they won't be getting them. I'm the number one selling book of all time. I done made billions. But if the people don't understand, I ain't happy. So come get with me, sit with me, and I'ma show you mysteries.
Shalom, shalom, and good morning, everybody. Welcome to the show. I am your host, your brother, your friend, as always, Tazapah. Welcome to Tazapah Tuesdays, y'all. Hope everybody is healthy. Hope everybody is in good spirits. Hope everybody had a good weekend, man. If it's your first time tuning in to the show, what I usually do is I get about an hour in of news, current events, or just what's on my mind at the time, man. And then I go in into the topic, which is today, what happens when I die? This is a question that a lot of people have, a lot of people have asked, a lot of people ponder over, man. And the Most High put it on my spirit to bring this class out, man, in light of recent events with me and my family. Just Just had another loss in my family. My second cousin passed, rest her soul. But about a month ago, before that happened, anybody that know me know that my son passed. So the Most High put it on my heart, man, to go back over this class. I want to send shots out before I get started, though, to all the brothers here in SA, man, ISBHPK, which is Israelite School of Biblical History and Practical Knowledge. So shout out to all the brothers here. Shout out to Eastern Oils, man, or what do they rename it? EF, Eastern Fragrances, which is the brothers' business here in San Antonio. You can find them at Rolling Oaks Mall for all your scents, your fragrances, your smell goods. Also, the brothers have another business, the moving company, On The Mark Moving. Brother Shem Shawan being the face of that company. Hit them up, y'all, for all your moving events. You know, everybody hates moving any damn way. So hit them up. He'll help you move. I promise you, man, you will not be sorry. He is very thorough and very thoughtful in moving your things, man. It would be the best decision that you ever made as far as moves go, man. Hit him up. Also sending shouts out to the brothers down in H-Town, y'all. My brothers Clock the Zop down there, Locker Rob. All the brothers down there holding it down. See y'all soon. We got Passover coming up, man. I believe in what? About a week to 2 weeks. Passover is definitely going down in Houston this year, y'all. Sending shouts out also to the brothers in VA, Kazaki and his crew up there with Brother Aria and the rest of those brothers holding it down, doing big things. And shouts out to the Rochester crew, the brothers Ayanala holding it down out there in Rochester, doing big things, gathering the lost sheep. And shouts also out to the brother Kyle Cobb, man. Ain't seen him or heard from him in a minute. Hope all is well going down in Guatemala, man. This is history classes that he was going over. Hope he starts those back soon. But let me go ahead and dive into it, y'all. A lot of stuff going on in the news, and a lot of stuff that I may or may not be privy to, man. And if you get a news story that you think will be interesting, you'd like to have my take on it, man, shoot it to me so I can check it out and go over and bring it out. So like I always do, let's get Psalms chapter 118 and verse 24. That would be y'all. Let me get it. Psalms chapter 118, verse 24. This is the day in which the Lord hath made. We will rejoice and be glad in it. So all praise to the Most High, man. Good or bad, happy or sad. If he's bringing you through it or bringing you to it, he's going to bring you through it better on the other side of it, y'all. We got to appreciate everything that happens to us because he is definitely in control, man. Definitely in control. Like I said, it's a lot going on in the news, man. This topic that everybody's raving and talking about, I know y'all have heard it, Will Smith at the Oscars, man. I mean, I got to dive into it. And y'all, I will be real with you. I had a lot to say about what took place because when I initially got the text or the clip, and watched it, I had a lot of questions. And I was looking at it from a common perspective. And I had, you know, common questions, such as, why would this dude just let somebody walk up on him and slap the mess out of him like that? That was my first question. My second question upon reviewing it, because you know how you get it. We all get little clips or whatever, and we watch them several times just so we could get the whole frame because these things happen so quick. But upon watching it again, I'm looking at Will Smith and he's laughing at the joke. And his response was like a real delayed response. And I just couldn't, it didn't add up. It didn't make sense to me. So those were the questions that I had. And then other questions I had, such as, they ain't got no security at the Oscars? No. And then he went and sat back down. Nobody escorted him out. You know, nobody said anything. Nobody flinched. It's just like this was normal to them. And I'm waiting on a response. I mean, and that puzzled me so much so that I had to go and get more footage other than the little clip that I was sent. And nobody did nothing. And then after all this go down, he still wins the Oscar. Which Chris Rock had already alluded to him winning in the first place. If you go back and watch the clip before the drama went down and before he made the jokes. Like I said, I was watching from a common perspective, but then Mashaba shot me a video, man, and I had to check the video out. Now, I ain't going to lie to y'all. When I initially started watching it, I wasn't feeling it, and I was like, I don't know. And I'm saying that because the video he sent me, it was just clips of what had happened and the voice of what sounded like, and I found out soon after I suspected it, that it was a sodomite. And I'm like, eh, you know. But then I thought about it. I'm like, well, who better than to trust with this information or believe or deem to be trustworthy with this information than one of their own kind? And when I say one of their own kind, man, because y'all know that sodomy is on the left-hand side of the Most High, and the Most High frowns very profusely on sodomy, which is homosexuality. We know the world knows it's homosexuality. But the Most High ain't down with that, man. So I'm thinking, like, okay, who would know better than him? And the dude went on in the video, y'all, to say that what we witnessed happen at the Oscars was a ritual. And I forget the name that he gave to the particular ritual. And I'm like, wow, that would make sense. That would answer a lot of the questions that I had as to why Chris Rock just got slapped and he didn't do nothing. Also, he had his hands behind his back. Go back and watch the clip. It's almost like he stuck his face out to be smacked. And then why no security came and why he still got the Oscar. So the dude was breaking it down, and I'm like, wow, pulled me in. It was intriguing. And it was on point, and he dropped this article right here, man. He dropped this one. You know, I'm a stickler for sources, man. The Bible even says prove all things, right? So he dropped this, and he said to check this article out, and he gave the headline verbatim. Now, this article is from the Huffington Post, or the Huff Post. And the headline reads, check this out, y'all. Will Smith had to shatter his image to get that Oscar. Whew. I'm going to read it one more time. Will Smith had to shatter his image to get that Oscar. This is the headline of this article. And I'm thinking, I'm like, wow. And this is what validated the video that I watched. And I'm going to go ahead and read the article in a minute, y'all. But I want y'all to marinate on this. So, you know, matter of fact, let me read the article. Let me get into it. So it says, Will Smith had to shatter his image to get that Oscar. After 3 decades in Hollywood, the multi-hyphenated star finally dropped his pristine persona and one of the wildest and most memorable runs for Academy Award glory. So they're telling you in the article what this dude did. He dropped his persona, who people knew him as, but he did it all to get Oscar glory. And I want us to be mindful of this also, y'all. Remember the Most High said this, and I'm going to get it. Get Exodus chapter 20, man. People swear they know the Bible and believe in the Bible, man, but they don't be seeing things that's right in front of their face. And I'm going to read this first, and then I'm going to break it down. So Exodus chapter 20, and let me start at verse 1. It says, "And God spake all these words, saying, I am the Lord thy God, or thy power, which hath brought thee out of the land of Egypt, out of the house of bondage. Thou shalt have no other gods," and it's a little g, and it's plural, "before me." So, and Moses was speaking this to the children of Israel. It tells you that in Deuteronomy chapter 1 and verse 1. He was speaking it to the children of Israel. So the children of Israel, which we know historically and biblically are the so-called blacks, Hispanics, and Native Americans, as well as other people that are scattered throughout the four corners of the globe, of the world. Countless other scriptures tell you that Israel would be scattered. All right? But the children of Israel were told that they couldn't have any other gods. And if you study the Bible and you understand the Bible, this is why we kept getting punished and going into many different captivities, including the current captivity that we are in, the latter half of the Greco-Roman captivity, which is America, because they're one and the same. But the Most High told us not to serve any other gods. Now listen to this. "Thou shalt not make unto thee any graven images or any likeness of anything that is in heaven above or that is in the earth beneath or that is in the water under the earth." So what the Most High is telling us is don't make any graven images and not to serve them, not to worship them. Now, remember the article that I'm reading took place at the Oscars. And what is the Oscar? It's a statue. It's an idol. It's an idol of, I think it's a man standing up. It's an idol, y'all. And people worship this idol. Our people worship this idol, which is so ironic because the first thing most of us say when we win is, "I like to thank God." And not just this, I'm talking about, hell, American Idol. I'm talking about the Grammys, the Kids' Choice Awards. What other awards they got? The Emmys, the American Music Awards. I mean, you name it, and all of them got what? An idol that they give you. And they bring it out. Our people be kissing all on it. And even our athletic brothers in football, basketball, soccer, baseball, all of them play for what? An idol, which they call a trophy. And then you see them. You go back and watch clips of Michael Jordan falling all on the ground, hugging and kissing the damn, I forgot the name of the trophy that they get, but it's a basketball, hugging it, kissing it. They pouring champagne all over me, celebrate. And it ain't just him, Kobe, LeBron, all of them. That's what they play for. But the Most High said that we weren't supposed to make graven images and we weren't supposed to worship them. But that's what our people are doing when they participate in these things. I want us to understand this. Also, I want us to understand, I'm going to get into it, that these rules were given to a certain particular group of people, only the Israelites, not the whole world. We have to understand that. So going back to this article, let me pick up here. It says, "If you were to say back in 1994 that Will Smith would win an Oscar one day, folks might not have believed you. It's not that it was completely absurd to suggest that he had the chops to achieve what is considered Hollywood's highest honor. After all, that same year, he wowed audiences when he showed another side of the goofy, fish out of water, yet also cool Will on the Fresh Prince of Bel-Air, with the heartening storyline of a young black man disappointed by his deadbeat dad, played by Ben Vereen, and he went toe-to-toe with heavyweights Stockard Channing and Donald Sutherland in 6 degrees of separation just the previous year. Man, this article is mind-blowing. It's telling so much, telling you the truth right in front of your face. But a lot of people will read this and they still won't get it. For y'all who's not familiar with the movie 6 degrees of Separation, go back. See, you can find it on so many streaming platforms. You should be able to find the movie. I've seen clips of it. I couldn't stomach it. I couldn't get through it. But in this movie, Will Smith plays some type of con man thief that is, in fact, a homosexual. And there are explicit scenes in the movie where he's doing homosexual acts. But he did this a year before he got the Fresh Prince of Bel-Air role. So why did he get the Fresh Prince of Bel-Air role? Because he made the 6 degrees of separation. He was sacrificing his manhood to get this role so he could rise even higher in fame and glory. He essentially sold his soul, y'all. And I went over this before. Selling your soul means you're selling your integrity. Your integrity is not your original state. I'm sorry. Your integrity is your original state. But when you lose your integrity, you lose your original state. And this is what he did. Now, the article goes on. It says, it's just that he never really played the insidious Hollywood game of the campaign. The exhaustive exercise of transforming yourself from an actor into a celebrity throughout the entire award cycle. Sure, the Affordable star charmed us with his hilarious quips and signature golf work in myriad interviews about delivering into the psyche and physical demands of Muhammad Ali for his first nominated turn in Ali in 2002. And I saw that movie. Man, great actor, dude. Great actor. When I seen that movie, I didn't see Will Smith. I saw Muhammad Ali. Great role. It says, and he continued to discuss his journey from a blockbuster, surefire Grammy winning rapper and lovable character from the Fresh Prince of Bel-Air to the well-respected actor when the Academy recognized him again for The Pursuit of Happiness 5 years later. And I've seen that movie. Tearjerker. Great movie. They don't have this movie listed, man, but another movie he made, 7 Pounds, man. Great damn movie. That one had me tearjerking too. Good actor. Now, why is all of this relevant? Because these movies, great performances, right? But he didn't get the actual Academy Award for these movies. Now, does this remind y'all of something? Does this remind y'all of anybody? What about Denzel? Aha, what about Denzel, y'all? Y'all remember Denzel, and going back, for us to remember long enough, that far back, old of us anyway, the movie Glory, a Civil War movie about, and based on a true story, about a black infantry unit that was fighting in the Union Army and finally got the go-ahead from Esau, from the so-called white man, to go ahead and participate in the war. Denzel played a hell of a role, man. That one scene, he was getting whipped. So he's a Union soldier in the Union Army, and I forgot what he did, but they took his shirt off of him, and they whipped him with a whip. Ain't that ironic, too? So you got these black slaves, former slaves, join your Union Army to fight against what you say is you fighting against slavery. But here you is whooping him like a slave. Ain't that something? Anyway, this scene stuck out in my mind because Denzel made this scene so believable because he was getting whooped. And before he even got whooped, the camera panned in on his back, and he had whip marks all over his back already. So he was like a pro to getting whipped by a whip. go ahead and proceed with the scene, with the whipping, and dude hit him with the whip, and Denzel is not even crying, screaming. I mean, and he there's no emotion. And he's looking at the commanding dude that ordered him to get whipped, and then just one tear rolls down one of his eyes onto his cheek. And I'm like, man, that scene right there, that did it for me, man. You were angry, pissed off, sad, all at the same time, man. Great performance by Denzel. But anyway, my point is that gave a great performance, but he didn't win no Oscar for that movie. So speed up, fast forward, he played Malcolm X. Another great movie. Once again, I didn't see Denzel. I seen Malcolm X. He didn't win for that. But what the hell did he win for, y'all? Y'all remember? He won for Training Day, where he played basically a nigga that was just lawless. A corrupt cop, had him smoking weed, dipping out on his wife, had a side piece that was played by Eva Mendez with a whole baby on the side. Then he corrupted his new recruit, played by Ethan Hawke, had him smoking Sherms, PCP, and just was reckless. And they was like, oh, man, greatest performance of his career. Gave him an Academy Award for it. Sound familiar, y'all? Does it sound familiar? Same thing with Will. Anyway, reading all in this article, it says, where was I at? Pursuit of Happiness. Okay, here we go. But it wasn't really until the month leading up to the release of King Richard last year when Smith decided to shatter the dam between his personal life and personal persona. Now, I haven't seen this movie yet, y'all, but I definitely plan on checking it out now. The reason I ain't watch it because, in my opinion, the casting was off because Venus Mim Daddy was dark as hell. So how a light-skinned dude gonna play him? So that's why I ain't watch it, y'all. I'm sorry. I be sticklers for cast sometimes, man. Well, most of the time. It's got to be a good cast. Anyway, and subsequently paved himself a smooth path to Oscar victory. But while it... Now, listen, let me read this part again. It says, but it wasn't really until the months leading up to the release of King Richard last year when Smith decided to shatter the dam between his personal life and professional persona. Y'all hear that? They're telling us how he got the award. He had to kill everybody's image of him. He had to kill the squeaky clean good guy image. Like who? Like Denzel. It says, and subsequently paved himself a smooth path to Oscar victory. But while it proved to be a triumphant method for him, it was a wild and careless routine for the rest of us to witness. Now, they're even telling you what he did in transforming his persona was triumphant for him. Because what was his goal? His goal was to get this idol and to rise to a high level of Satanhood. Let me read on. It says, you can argue that that was a necessary act for his audience portrayal of Richard Williams, the deeply flawed yet devoted father of real-life tennis champion Serena and Venus Williams. So people, you could say, okay, he was getting into the role is what they're saying. Richard is direct, uninterested in whether or not he's liked and willing to risk it all to secure his dream of turning his daughters into two of the greatest athletes ever. On the other hand, Smith has generally always taken the safe option. And he has. Unlike Richard and King Richard, Smith has historically doomed the image of a loving and equal partner to his wife. I'm sorry, Don, the image of a loving and equal partner to his wife, Jada Pinkett Smith. He seemed to have very much cared about how his fans will view him. He famously refrained from using curse words in his songs, dodged any hint of controversy by turning down roles like Jamie Foxx's role in Django Unchained, and denying all kinds of awkward rumors about him and his wife. Yeah, they some swingers. It's been verified 1,000 times over. And yeah, I do remember listening to Will Smith's songs. Go back, check it out. From when, even when he started with Ready Rock C and DJ Jazzy Jeff, he never cursed. So he had a squeaky clean image from the beginning. It says, ever the good guy, both on screen and inside his own carefully cultivated personal narrative, he cleared up any concerns about the stability of his marriage with a surprising visit to Pinkett Smith's chatty red table talk in 2018. That was filled with many revelations, but he made sure that the takeaway was there's nothing that could happen that we won't be together and love each other. So he's telling you right there. He says nothing that could happen that we ain't gonna be together, including extra rods, extra woods hanging out in the closet, extra sticks, extra pipes just hanging around. Even that ain't gonna break them up. I mean, he came out and proved it with the what's the dude's name, August Alsino, and that was another question that I had. So this dude, Chris Rock, making joke about your wife, you get up and smack him. But the August Alsino dude, he been smashing your wife and made a song about it and dropped your name in the song and you don't do nothing? So that had me scratching my head too, but now it all makes sense. Anyway, going on. He said to Pinkett Smith, because I've never met anyone like you, and I knew if I wasn't with you, I'd be searching in vain for the rest of my whole life. For the rest of my life. But a few years later, Smith clearly ran out of fucks. And this is what the article is saying, y'all. Excuse the profanity. He dropped the act and yanked all his skeletons and demons out of the closet to reveal a more flawed version of himself that became more compatible to Richard. So, and he said it too in his acceptance piece, Art Imitates Life, right? Though he saw tracks of it, we saw tracks of it with the Fresh Prince of Bel-Air reunion in November 2020, where he finally admitted that he was essentially a pompous jerk to Janet Herbert and apologized. His mediocre efforts to blow up his own image in the most respectful way possible came in 2021, and it started at a level of about 25 and went up to 10,000 in what felt like a day. The once ripped action star exposed his belly on the internet and vowed to get fit again. Yeah, I remember seeing that. Then Smith spilled all the tea in the much talked about GQ cover story pegged to release of his memoir, Will and King Richard, in which he acknowledged that his persona all these years has been a ruse to hide some of the emotional scars he's had since childhood. Smith candidly discussed how his dad, his biggest champion, abused his mother growing up and how he lived both in fear and in awe of him. The article includes the excerpt from his book, My Father Tormented Me, and he was also one of the greatest men I've ever known. He was one of the greatest blessings of my life and also one of the greatest sources of pain. So he said it in his book. There was also the admission that despite him and Pinkett Smith working out their relationship issues, he longed for a harem of girlfriends that included Halle Berry and how she never believed in conventional marriage. So they telling you right there. Come on, man. Tell me some rumors. Ain't no rumors. It's confirmed. And just tonight, he slapped Chris Rock on live television at the Oscars after the presenter comedian made a joke about Jada's shaved head. Then he yelled to him from his seat in the audience, keep my wife's name out of your effing mouth twice. Lest we forget all the chaotic details that emerged once more readers got their hands on it, will his experience with a psychedelic drug following a particularly exhausting spat with Jada Pinkett, his teenage suicidal ideations, falling in love with Channing during his first marriage, his desire to murder his dad when he was growing up, his urge to vomit after having sex, it was a lot, and continue to be rolled out on a basic, on a daily basis, like an increasingly uncomfortable alarm clock. But apparently it paid off. Oh, y'all see that? But apparently it paid off. So they're naming all the stuff he did to destroy his squeaky clean image, and they say that it paid off. Now watch this. The once tight-lipped, eager-to-please star who rose from the 90s and early aughts is now in, as he told GQ, his effort 50s, and has fully committed to the ridiculous expectations of celebrity culture. He did it in his own time and in his own bizarre way, but it worked out. See, it worked out for him. And the best part about it, he hasn't lost an iota of respect from neither his peers nor his fans. So that's the article, y'all. And like I said, this validated the video that Mashaba had sent me. Because like I said, I didn't believe it at first. I was kind of skeptical. But it makes perfect sense. Denzel did it to get his Oscar. Will did it to get his. Now, this is where I want to go to. Let's get Psalm chapter 50. So this is what it reminded me of when I dug a little bit deeper into the situation, because everybody's got their take on it. They're coming from different angles. A lot of people were coming from the black perspectives. So I'm talking about, I heard somebody say if that was what's the white comedian Seinfeld dude? Oh, yeah, Jerry Seinfeld. There was Jerry Seinfeld that Will Smith had slapped. They talked about how he would have been carried off by the police, yada, yada, yada. Y'all, that's not the angle we should be looking at it from. There's no racial, no racial nothing in this situation. This is about good and evil, y'all. Plain and simple. This is about the left-hand side of the Most High. I'm going to prove it. So this is Psalms chapter 50 and verse 5. Now listen to this. Gather my saints together unto me, those that have made a covenant with me by sacrifice. This is what the Most High said. So he said, gather his saints together, those that have made a covenant or a contract. He says, by sacrifice. So this is how you get closer to the Most High. This is how you make a contract or a covenant with the Most High through sacrifice. I went over this in my, four-part series. Just finished it up last week. What was the title of it? Oh, Vocation. Y'all can check that out. And you find out that you had to make some type of sacrifice to the Most High to enter into a covenant with him. It's just going back, Abraham, he circumcised the foreskin of his flesh, which was just a token of the covenant, not the actual covenant, but a token of it. And that's just to get the Most High on your side, to get his attention. And I also went over the Levitical law, which gave the law of sacrifice, where you have to sacrifice an animal in order to get the Most High's approval or to just enter into a contract with the Most High, like we did after we came out of Egypt. It's also discussed in Hebrews, but that sacrifice is talking about Christ, who his biblical name, Hebrew name, is Yahweh Shai. He made the ultimate sacrifice. He gave up his life. That's why he's referred to as the Lamb, right? So in order to enter into a covenant or a contract with the Most High, or to get his approval, get his attention, you got to sacrifice something. So that's in dealing with the Most High. Now, check out this. So let's get Ecclesiasticus now, chapter 33. So we call it the right-hand side of the Most High and the left-hand side of the Most High, man. It does exist, y'all. So Ecclesiastes chapter 33, and let me start at verse 12. Ecclesiastes 33 and verse 12, and it reads, wait a minute, did I have the right one? No, I want verse 14. Here it is. Good is set against evil. Y'all see this? So good is set, meaning against, opposition, or duality. So the opposite of good is evil, right? It says, and life against death. So the opposite of life is death. This is duality, y'all. This is, like I said, there's a right-hand side of the Most High and a left-hand side of the Most High. It says, so is the godly against the sinner and the sinner against the godly. Now watch this. So look upon all the works of the Most High, and there are two and two, one against another. And this is all the works. When it says all the works, all the things that he created, all the things the Most High created has an opposite to it. You have light, you have darkness. You have good, you have evil. Everything has a duality. The Most High created it this way. Going back to what I said earlier, there's a right-hand side of the Most High. There's a left-hand side of the Most High. Y'all remember those old cartoons back in the day? Or it might even be in some movies with animated characters where they have an angel on your right shoulder and then they got a devil on your left shoulder. That's actual. Hollywood knows about this. They know the Bible. They understand the scriptures. This is why those movies that you watch be so entertaining, because they have an antagonist and a protagonist in the movie. This is what lures you in, good versus evil. Blockbuster hit, man. Sell out at the box office. This is what everybody wants to see. Well, there's some reality to this, y'all. There's a good side and there's a bad side. The Most High rules both of them, though. You can go in the book of Job, first chapter, and read and understand that. He's in control of both. But he gave that left-hand side to Satan. That's Satan's zone all day. The Most High allows him to operate and do those things. Once again, Job chapter 1 and chapter 2 tells you that. Go back and read it. But I want us to understand this. So the sacrifice that Will Smith made to get that Oscar was he had to destroy his character, his squeaky clean image. He had to defamate his own character. You know, they say defamation of character, right? All right, so let me keep proving what I'm talking about. Let's get Luke chapter 4 and verse 5. So Luke chapter 4. And it reads, let me start at verse 4. And the devil, taking him up into a high mountain, shewed unto him all the kingdoms of the world in a moment of time. So this is when Christ was tempted by Satan, or the devil. It was one and the same. And the word devil means deceiver. So he was taken up in the mountain, and Satan showed him the whole world, all the kingdoms. When you have kingdoms, you have power. You have power. You have rulership. So he showed him all of this in a moment of time. And listen to what he said in verse 6. He said, and the devil said unto him, all this power, you see this? All this power will I give thee and the glory of it, for that is delivered unto me. Who delivered it to him? Who gave it to him? The Most High did. This proves that he's not operating wrong like everybody thinks. Oh, Satan is just, you know, there's a war between him and God going on. And he up there slapping the Most High upside the head and punking him for his lunch money. That's not going on, y'all. The Most High granted him this power. It says, for that is delivered unto me. He's telling you. And to whomsoever I will, I give it. Meaning he can give this power to anybody he wants to give it to. But this is the condition. Verse 7. if thou therefore wilt worship me, and shall be thine. I'm sorry, all shall be thine. He said, you got to worship me. You can have all of this glory. You can have stardom, fame, glory. You can have all of this, but what's the payoff? You got to worship me. And how do you worship Satan? The same way you worship the Most High. You got to offer a sacrifice. You got to give a sacrifice. You have to sacrifice something. Let me read on. Verse 6. And the devil said unto him, I read that. Let me read verse 7. If thou therefore will worship me, all shall be thine. And Jesus answered and said unto him, get thee behind me, Satan, for it is written, thou shalt worship the Lord thy God or thy power, and him only shalt thou serve. So this is how a child of Christ come back, tell him no. The Israelites were forbidden to worship any other God. That's why he said it's written. Where is it written at? In the Old Testament. We just read it in Exodus. The first 10 commandments tell you that. Don't worship no other gods. So this is what he's telling them. Now let's get Ephesians chapter 6 and verse 12. And Will Smith, according to what I know of him, would be considered an Israelite, y'all. And when I say that, I'm meaning that he's a so-called black man. And we know that the Israelites, historically and biblically, are the black and Hispanic people that are scattered, black, Hispanic, and Native American people that are scattered throughout the four corners of the globe. So let's get Ephesians now. And my point in saying that is that he shouldn't be participating in those rituals. He shouldn't be worshiping those other gods. But it's all right. The Most High got him. He got punishment for him. I'm going to get to that in a minute. Ephesians chapter 6 and verse 12, y'all. It says, for we wrestle not against flesh and blood, but against principalities. And you look at this word of principality, it means strong demonic demons. You can find that definition in the Zondervan Pictorial Dictionary. Strong demonic demons, that's what principalities are, or spirits, y'all. It says against powers. So we wrestle against spirits, we wrestle against powers, things we can't see. You'll be trying to make something happen, and it seemed like an unseeable force is just stopping it from happening. Like you trying to make moves to do something, get a house, get a car, get a new job, and it just keep these obstacles are just in the way at every turn. You can't see them. You can't put your hands on them. You just know there's something resisting you. Those are spirits, y'all. Those are spirits. Or you ever get into, to say, man, I'm going to start back working out. I'm gaining a little weight. And you start working out and you can't get into it. Or you ain't seeing no results. You ain't seeing the results because you haven't caught the spirit of working out. There's a spirit to everything. You have to be in that spirit in order to work out and to lose weight. If you ain't in that zone, if you ain't in that spirit, you're not going to be successful. No different than Will Smith being in Hollywood. He's got to be in that particular spirit because he's in that zone. It says the rulers of darkness of this world against the rulers of darkness of this world is telling you what? This world is ruled by what? Darkness. This is why you got so many stories about pedophilia, about homosexuality, about murder, about rape, about incest, about all of this stuff. This is why you got so much of this stuff going on, because this place is full of darkness. It says of this world against spiritual wickedness in high places. Let you know what? That there are wicked people all the way at the top. When it says high places, all the way to the top. What's the highest form of this place called America? Let me just deal with America. It's people in government. That's the highest form. But it says this world, so all across the globe, in governments, you're going to find what? Wicked people. The scriptures is telling us. against spiritual wickedness in high places. Who's ever in control, whoever's in authority is what? Wicked as hell. Because they, why are they wicked as hell? Because they had to make the sacrifice to get to where they got. No different than Will. Anyway, let's get the book of Jude now. Chapter 5. Let's deal with us as a people, as a nation. So Jude chapter 5, or Judith chapter 5, and this is in the Apocrypha, y'all, which was took out of the Bible. Judith chapter 5 and verse 5, and it reads, I ain't going to read all of this for time constraints. I want to get to my class, but I got to get a little bit of it. It says, then said Achor, the captain of all the sons of Ammon. Now, what's going on here is this cat named Holofer, which was the captain of the Assyrian army, is coming against Israel, coming against the Israelites, and he wants to know, what's up with these people, man? Why are they not submitting to me? And can I beat them? Can they be defeated? So he acquires the help of this cat, Achor, and he tells him, he says, then said Achor, the captain of all the sons of Ammon, let my Lord now hear a word from the mouth of thy servant. And I will declare unto thee the truth concerning this people, talking about the Israelites, which dwell near thee and inhabit the hill countries, and there shall no lie come out of my mouth, come out of the mouth of thy servant. This people are descended of the Chaldees. And it's talking about Abraham, because remember, he was in the land of the Chaldees. He says, and they sojourn heretofore in Mesopotamia. Remember, Abraham went to Mesopotamia, which means between the rivers, because they would not follow the gods of their fathers, which were in the land of Chaldea. And the only one that wouldn't follow the gods of our fathers was Abraham. Remember, he got up and left. I believe it's Genesis chapter 25. The Most High told him to leave away from the people. Verse 8, for they left the way of their ancestors and worshiped the God of heaven, the God whom they knew, so they cast them off from the face of their gods, and they fled into Mesopotamia and sojourned there many days. Then their God commanded them to depart from that place, from the place where they sojourned, and to go into the land of Canaan, where they dwelt and were increased with gold and silver and with very much cattle. But when a famine covered all the land of Canaan, they went down into Egypt and sojourned there while they were nourished, and became there a great multitude, so that one could not number their nation. This is talking about when we went into Egypt by way of Joseph, his brethren, and then our forefather Jacob. So, and I love this too, man, because this account lines right up with the story of Exodus, man. It goes from Genesis to Exodus, which shows you that the Apocrypha is very well a part of the Bible. Anyway, verse 11, therefore the king of Egypt rose up against them and dealt subtly with them and brought them low with laboring and brick and made them slaves. He's talking about our slavery in the land of Egypt. Now let me jump down, y'all. So let's go to verse 20. So this dude is running down a crash course history of our people and our nation. And then this is his conclusion in verse 20. He says, now therefore, my Lord and governor, if there be any error in this people, meaning if you can find them in any fault or catch them tripping, this is it. This is how you're going to get them. It says, and they sin against their God. If we do what? If we sin, if we break the law, because sin is the transgression of the law, let us consider that this shall be their ruin. So what's our downfall as Israelites when we break the laws of the Most High? Because remember, the law is the actual covenant or the contract. It says, and let us go up, and we shall overcome them. Now listen to this, verse 21. But if there be no iniquity in their nation, let my Lord now pass by. So he says, if they ain't breaking the laws of their God, you need to pass by. It says, lest their God, their Lord, defend them. So when will the Most High fight for us? when we're doing things his way, when we're keeping his law, statutes, and commandments. That's when he'll fight for us. He says, and their God be for them, and we become a reproach before all the world. So this dude is telling them, hey, man, if they're on point with their God, then he's going to bless them. But if they sinning, he ain't going to bless them, and that's going to be their downfall. This is why we're living the curses of Deuteronomy 28, y'all. And let's get Deuteronomy chapter 18 and verse 10. Deuteronomy chapter 18, verse 10, and it reads, there shall not be found among you, among who? The Israelites. There shall not be found among you anyone that maketh his son or his daughter to pass through the fire. This is how you serve and worship Molech. And when you look into the study of Molech, you didn't have to necessarily kill your son or your daughter, but you had to sacrifice something. You had to offer up something. And Molech would be that owl that you see. They have it at that big old owl that be at the Bohemian Grove. They've made it fashionable where you see owls on people's T-shirts. And now that's Molech. That's the god of Molech, y'all. It says to pass through the fire or that use it divination. Divination is witchcraft. It says or an observer of times, witchcraft, or an enchanter. Or a witch. So all of this is witchcraft, y'all. We were forbidden to do. Verse 11, it says, or a charmer, or a consorter with familiar spirits, those crystal balls, those psychic readings. This is what it's talking about. Or a wizard, or a necromancer. We were forbidden to do any of this. But this is what Will is doing. This is what he's into, y'all. Let's get 2 Kings chapter 17, verse 17. And I apologize too, y'all, because there was other stories I wanted to get to, but this was the most pressing one. It was on my mind the most. I had so much to say on it, so I hit it up. But I know Esau got something else going on too, to where he's making us look at this to distract us. But this is still an important topic that a lot of us got to understand. So 2 Kings chapter 17, verse 17 says, And they cause their sons, the day is us, we cause our sons and daughters to pass through the fire and use divinations and enchantments and sold themselves to do evil. So what is using divination and enchantments and burning your kids is evil in the sight of the Lord to provoke him to anger. And we do it this day and age, even with our children. We ain't burning them, but we sacrificing them because you read about brothers and sisters that they'll go and they do their career. And their kids grow up with by themselves, or the grandmama raises them, big mama, auntie, whoever raised them. That's a sacrifice, y'all. That's a sacrifice also. You sacrifice enjoying and raising your kids up the way you're supposed to be with them and raising them so you can go chase your damn career. Now let's get 1 Corinthians chapter 10, verse 20. I read this last week, too. Because we was talking about the new Supreme Court Justice lady, Ketanji Brown, I think it was. Once again, that spirit, that weakness in high and low places. 1 Corinthians 10 and 20. And it reads, but I say that the things which the Gentiles or the nations, because that's what the word Gentiles means nations. The things that which the Gentiles sacrifice, they sacrifice to devils and not to God. So the nations be big on American Idol, the Emmys, the Grammys, American Music Awards, the Super Bowl, the NBA Finals, the World Series. That's all a sacrifice to who? To devils and not to God. And I would not that ye should have fellowship with devils. And this stuff be right up under our nose, man. We be looking over it. But remember the Most High told us in Jeremiah chapter 10, verse 1. Get that real quick. Jeremiah gonna get to the class in a minute. So Jeremiah chapter 10 verse 1. Heed the words of the Lord, which the Lord speaketh unto you, O house of Israel. Thus said the Lord, learn not the way of the heathen or Gentiles. Don't learn the way of the Gentiles. They sacrifice the devils, remember? Now let's get Amos chapter 3. This is why the Most High said this, Amos 3 and 1. Hear this word that the Lord had spoke against you, O children of Israel, against the whole family which I brought up from the land of Egypt, saying, you only have I known of all the families of the earth, meaning of all the nations that he created. He said, we're the only ones that he has known intimately. We're the only ones he dealt with. He says, therefore, I will punish you for all your iniquities. This is why we be getting smashed so much as so-called blacks, Hispanics, and Native Americans, y'all. This is why we go through all the stuff we go through. This is why we're in the ghettos. This is why all the curses of Deuteronomy 28 applies to us. The Most High is punishing us for breaking his way of doing things, which is his law, statutes, and commandments. And the Most High's punishment is real. And you think it's a joke? Trip off of this right here. This is Isaiah chapter 3. Because Jada is very much a part of this also. So let me hit up real quick. Isaiah 3 and 24, it says, and it shall come to pass. Matter of fact, let me jump up to get some context. Verse 17, therefore the Lord will smite with a scab the crown. Matter of fact, verse 16, moreover, the Lord said, because the daughters of Zion are haughty. The daughters of Zion is talking about the women of Israel. That's who it's talking about. It says, because Zion was a big hill, which they call a mountain because it was so big, that was in the land of Israel. So he's talking about the daughters of Israel, the daughters of Zion. Now look what he says in verse 24. He said, I'm sorry, let me read verse 16 again. Moreover, the Lord said, because the daughters of Zion are haughty and walk with stretched forth necks and wanton eyes, walking and mincing as they go and making a tingling with their feet. Now, he goes on to a list of punishments he was going to give our women for being haughty, which means prideful. And y'all can see it this day and age in all our women. Now, watch this, verse 24. And it shall come to pass that instead of sweet smell, there shall be stink. Y'all can put that together. What be stinking instead of being sweet? Anyway, let me read on. And instead of a girdle, a rent. A girdle has your stomach tucked in, right? That's why women wear girdles, or what they call spanks, right? Why do women need a spank? Because the Most High cursed to where you have that big belly, where you got the booty do, where your belly hang out more than your booty do. It says, and instead of a girdle, a rent. And instead of well-set hair, baldness. So why is Jada bald head? Why she got alopecia? Because the Most High did that. For all her damn wickedness, she went around with a bald head now. Anyway, man, that's my take on the whole Will Smith situation. Now let's get on into the class, y'all. So the title of the class is What Happens When I Die. So a lot of people believe that when they die, they're going to come back as an animal or a flower or a damn insect. I've heard people say this. And before I came into the knowledge of the truth, I was thinking that maybe it was something to that. You know, because you hear people say, well, man, this bird was outside my window after my grandmama passed and he wouldn't go nowhere. Man, that's grandma. Or you think, man, this cat or this whatever animal just kept hanging around after somebody died. Or you see that movie, I forgot, it was supposed to be part two to The Shining. I forgot the name of it. It was a cat in that movie. He would go and sit on people's bed right before they was going to die. Let you know that it was time for them to die. Everybody got these superstitions, or stupid stitions, I call them, on what happens when they die. And like I said, the most prominent one that I've heard is, do I come back as an animal? So let's get this. Let's get 1 Corinthians chapter 15 and verse 39. So 1 Corinthians chapter 15, verse 39, and it reads, listen to this, y'all. All flesh is not the same flesh. So what is this saying? Let me read on. But there is one kind of flesh of men. So it's like, you know, it's different types of flesh. There's a flesh of men, mankind, another flesh of beasts, another of fishes, and another of birds. So he's breaking down not just man, but then he gets into the animal kingdom, letting you know man's flesh is different from who? From a beast, from an animal's flesh, right? Unless you didn't know that an animal's flesh is different from a fish flesh, right? Then he lets you know that even fish flesh is different from bird's flesh. I hope everybody is seeing this. So if all these flesh are different from one another, then how can you come back to life or be reincarnated as an animal if all these flesh are different? So if all the flesh are different, then all the spirits must be different also, right? Let's get into it. Let's go to Ecclesiasticus in the Apocrypha, chapter 13. Now watch this. So go to Ecclesiastes chapter 13 and starting at verse 15, y'all. And it reads, every beast loveth his like, and every man his neighbor. All flesh consorted according to kind. The word consort means to associate. So all flesh associates with their own kind. All flesh. So all the flesh I just named consults with his own kind. So man consults with other mankind. You have beasts or animals that consort with other beasts. Like you have lions that hang out with other lions. You have gazelles that hang out with other gazelles. Elephants hang out with other elephants. Crocodiles hang out with other crocodiles. This is the law of nature. This is what you see in nature. Now it says, and a man... hold up. Every beast loveth his like, and every man loveth his neighbor. That's verse 15. Verse 16, all flesh consort according to kind, and a man will cleave to his like. So we cleave and hang around people that we like, even in the human realm of things. Other thug gangster killers hang around other thug gangster killers. Other weed smokers hang around other weed smokers. Other crackheads hang around other crackheads. Other swingers hang around other swingers. I mean, this is just the law of nature. Biblical people that believe in the Bible hang around other biblical people that believe in the Bible. I mean, it goes so on and so forth. But he's letting us know that every flesh consorts or associates with his own flesh. Now listen to what it says here. It says, what fellowship have the wolf with the lamb? So you don't see wolves hanging out with lambs, right? Why? Because the wolf knows or the lamb knows that they lunch meat, basically. They're the next meal for the wolf. So why am I going to be hanging out with them? He says, so the sinner with the godly. Right. Psalms chapter 1 told us, blessed is the man that taketh not the counsel of the ungodly. So letting you know that godly people don't hang out with sinners. That's against nature. But my point in bringing all of this out, y'all, is to show that like I broke down in 1 Corinthians, there are different types of flesh. And those different types of flesh, they all hang together. They all hang together. They don't mismatch. They don't swap. So here he's giving us the example. He says, what fellowship have the wolf with the lamb? So the center with the golly. It says, what agreement is there between the hyena and the dog? And what peace between the rich and the poor? Letting you know that there are different kinds of flesh, and they do not all consort or associate together. So if they're not consorting or associating together, then how the hell can a human being spirit enter into an animal's body and be reincarnated, or into a bug, to a little insect, or into a flower or a tree or whatever the hell you think you come back as? The Bible's letting us know nature does not work like that, y'all. Nature don't work like that. So let's find out what happens to the spirit of a man and the spirit of an animal. So let's go to Ecclesiastes chapter 3. Let's get it from the Bible. So let's not use our speculation, our so-called deductive reasoning, our opinions basically, to try to say what happens to you when you die. Let's get some actual concrete proof. Let's get some facts out of the Bible. Let's go straight to the source. The Most High made and created everything. He even created, he said he didn't create that. That's a whole nother topic. But the Most High created everything, so he should be the one to ask what happens. So let's get what he says about what happens when you die. So Ecclesiastes chapter 3 and verse 19, and it reads, "For that which befalleth the sons of men befalleth beasts, even one thing befalleth them, as the one dieth, so dieth the others." So it's letting you know the one thing that man and beast do have in common is death. Animals die, people die. So it's letting us know that. It says, "Yea, they have all one breath, so that a man hath no preeminence above a beast, for all is vanity." He's saying man ain't no better than the beast because we all gonna die. We all die the same. Now listen to this. This is the point I want to get to. Verse 20. All go into one place. What's the one place they all going? Trip off of this. All are of the dust. And all turn to dust again. It tells us in Genesis chapter 2 and verse 7 that God created man of the dust of the ground. It lets us know that. So it's letting you know those animals, they decompose and they go back to the dirt also, just like a man. That's why you say when somebody die, ash to ash, dust to dust. They go back to the ground. Now watch this, verse 21. "Who knoweth the spirit of man that goeth upward?" So where does a man's spirit go when he dies? It goes upward. His flesh don't go upward, but his carcass decomposes and turns back into dirt. It says, "And the spirit of the beast that goeth downward to the earth." So the spirits are going into two totally different places. The man's spirit is going up. The beast spirit is going down. Let you know they're two totally separate spirits. They don't go into the same place. So is there a heaven for dogs? I don't know, maybe. But it ain't the same place that a man's spirit's going. That's for damn sure. According to the Bible, if you believe in the scriptures, no. Your dog, Rufus, Max, whatever your dog name is, if he die, his spirit ain't going up to heaven where human being spirits go. It don't work like that. That's not happening. I hope everybody get this. Everybody understand this. Because I know we be watching a lot of movies and a lot of animated stuff, and we be getting these ideas in our head like, oh, they own the sun. No, they not. They not own the sun. That's fantasy. That's not reality. I know we watching those movies where you see a man, he's got the torso of a man, the head of a man, arms of a man, and then his lower body, his lower half is that of a horse or something, or some type of antler or some, I don't know, man, a deer. Those half human, half beast. I forgot what they call. That's not actual, y'all. That ain't how the Most High works. The Most High says this. Let's get 1 Corinthians chapter 14. This is how you tell people that believe that nonsense don't believe the Bible, man. Even Paul said in one of his letters, he said, I perceive that thou art too superstitious. So people were stupid stitches even back then. 1 Corinthians chapter 14, verse 33, and it says, for God is not the author of confusion. Meaning what? All the ways of the Most High is simple and easily to be understood, man. Even, man, I got to get that too. Let's get 2 Corinthians chapter 11 now. Now watch this. We start at verse 2. This is Paul speaking one of his epistles. He says, for I am jealous over you with godly jealousy. For I have espoused you to one husband that I may present you as a chaste virgin to Christ. Now listen to this part I want to get to. But I fear lest by any means, as the serpent beguiled Eve through her subtlety, so your mind should be corrupted from the simplicity, that is in Christ. So it's letting you know what? That the knowledge and wisdom of, and understanding of the Most High of Christ, Yahweh Shai, is simplistic, y'all. It's simple. It ain't complicated. Somebody dying and being resurrected as an animal, a flower, a bug, or a plant, or a tree, that's complicated. That's hard to explain biblically. Because that doesn't happen. The Most High say he's not the author of confusion. He ain't. His wisdom, knowledge, and understanding is simple. You just have to put the precepts together. Like the scripture tells you, precept must be upon precept, line upon line, here a little, there a little. It also tells you in Psalms, it says, through thy precepts, plural, I get understanding. I can't just read one scripture and run with it. I got to have a whole bunch of supporting scriptures to back up what that one scripture is saying. So the Most High said he's not the author of confusion. Now watch this, verse 40. Let all things be done decently and in order. When he says all things, he means that everything should be done decently and in order. Everything you do, you should have some order and some decency to it. This is the way the Most High operates. This is why he has an animal kingdom. This is why he has a human kingdom, an insect kingdom, a plant kingdom. Everything has its own thing separated, and is what is orderly. That's what you call order, the order of things, the order of nature. This is how the Most High deals. This is how he operates. This is how he works. So, no, you're not coming back as an animal. You ain't coming back as some fly on the wall. That dove, that reminds me of my cousin Pookie. No, the Most High does not operate like that, y'all. So your question then might be, well, what happens to my spirit? Does my spirit walk around? Because I heard that too. Oh, I seen a spirit walking through the house. Now, I'm not saying that people don't see spirits. I'm not saying that. Because that's all throughout the scriptures also. But for you to say it's your relative or that you just lost or it's, we'd heard all kind of stories. So let's see what actually happens. Do spirits walk around after leaving their body, after their transition or their death? So let's get Job chapter 3. And thank the Most High we got the Bible, man, to inform us on these things, because without it, man, we'd be lost in believing all these superstitions and end up worshiping another deity, man, ignorantly. So let's get Job chapter 3. I'm going to start at verse 11. And it reads, it says, "Why die I not from the womb?" Now, this is Job. Now, remember, y'all, this is a little backdrop. Job had lost all his children, a lot of his possessions were taken, and Satan was kept tempting him, getting the Most High's permission to do so, of course. And then in chapter 2, the Most High was like, look, yeah, you took his possessions and stuff, his children died, and he's still loyal to you, but I bet if you touch him, if you touch his flesh, he's going to curse you to your face and stop worshiping you. So the Most High gave Satan permission. He said, go ahead, touch his flesh. He says, but don't kill him. That was the stipulation that the Most High gave Satan. He said, you can't kill him, but you can make him suffer. So Satan put those boils all the way on Job's head, all the way to the bottom of his feet. And this is Job saying, man, I wish I was dead. But let's find out why he's saying this. So Job chapter 3, verse 11, he says, why die I not from the womb? Why did I not give up the ghost when I came out of the belly? Why did the knees prevent me? Or why the breast that I should suck? For now should I have lain still and been quiet. So what happens when you die? Your spirit lies still and be quiet. It says, I should have slept. Then had I been at rest. So what happens to your spirit? Is it walking around, hanging out? No, it's resting. That's why when somebody die, they say what? They put on a tombstone, rest in peace. They're resting. They're asleep. I hope everybody's seeing this. It says, with kings and counselors of the earth, which build desolate places for themselves, because we all going to die. So he's letting you know, no matter the statue, you're going to die, and we're going to be what? Our spirit going to be resting. It says, or with princesses that had gold, who filled their houses with silver, or as a hidden untimely birth, what we call that? It's called being stillborn. Or as an hidden untimely birth. So the baby come out and the baby's just stillborn, lifeless, no spirit in the baby. It says, I had not been as infants which never saw light. There, where though? He's talking about being dead or being asleep. He says, there, the wicked cease from troubling. So when you dead, you truly are at rest. He says, the wicked cease from trouble. Ain't no bill collectors, y'all. Anybody calling about your late car note? CPS is not hanging that little pink slip on your door handle. Falls ain't trying to get at you. Baby mama ain't handling you for child support. He says, there the wicked cease from troubling. And there, the weary be at rest. Bombshell, y'all. The weary be at rest. What happens to your spirit when you die? Your spirit be at rest, man. I hope everybody's seeing this. Let me read on. There the prisoners rest together. They hear not the voice of the oppressor. Oh, my goodness. So when it says they hear not the voice of the oppressor, if they ain't hearing the voice of the oppressor, are they hearing any voices? So, people, our people, y'all going to the graveyard, the gravesite, putting all these gifts and stuff down for the dead, that's worshiping a deity also. I went over that before, because I did with Sapar. And you talking all to the grave site, you talking, or you just in your house, talking to your dead relative. They're not hearing you. They're resting, y'all. They're dead. They're at rest. When you sleep, and I'm talking about just being, you know, just sleep. You close your eyes for a couple hours, get some rest. When people trying to talk to you when you sleep, are you hearing anything? Hell no. Nah. Or when you sleepy, I have my wife, and my wife, she good for doing this. She's trying to have conversations with me when I sleep. I hate when she do that. And then ask me about the conversation when I get up. I ain't hearing nothing because I'm asleep. Dead people ain't hearing you talk to them, y'all. They're asleep. I hope everybody is seeing this, man. I really do. All right. Let's read on. What verse is there? Verse 19. The small and the great are there. See? Everybody's going there. And the servant is free from his master. In what? In death. So you ain't got to wake up at 4:30 no more to try to get to work by 6 or 5 or whatever time you're getting to work. Because you're free from your master. You're free from boss. You're at rest. All right, let's get Matthew chapter 19, chapter 9 now. We keep proving that when you die, your spirit is resting. It ain't walking around. Because we already read how the spirit of man go up. We're going to find out where that up is too. So let's get Matthew chapter 9. We'll read verse 18. And it reads, while he spake these things unto them, behold, there came a certain ruler and worshipped him, saying, now this is Jehovah Shai, and this ruler came to him saying, what? My daughter is even now dead. So this dude said, man, my daughter's dead. But come and lay thy hand upon her, and she shall live. He's telling, man, you can bring her back to life. So I want us to get to understand that she is dead. Now let's jump down to verse 23. And when Yahweh Shai, Jesus came into the ruler's house and saw the minstrels and the people making a noise, he said unto them, give place, for the maid is not dead. She's not what? He said, man, she's not dead. But listen to what he says. But sleep it. He said, man, she sleep. Because what happens to your spirit when you die? It ain't walking around. It's resting. It says, and they laughed him to scorn. So they laughed at him. Like, what the hell are you talking about? She sleep. She's a woman dead. Verse 25. Now watch this. But when the people were put forth, he went in and took her by the hand, and the maid arose. Arose from what? She woke up out of her sleep. So we already discovered that when a man dies, his spirit goes upward. So what would Christ have to do to make her wake up out of sleep? He would have had to send for her spirit to come back, to be put back in her body. I made the remark earlier, a stillborn, it's a baby that doesn't have a spirit in them, because your spirit is what gives you life, y'all. Now let's get St. John chapter 11. In John chapter 11, and we're going to start at we're going to jump around a bit, but I definitely want to get the point. So St. John chapter 11 and verse 11, and it reads, these things said he, and after that he said unto them, our friend Lazarus sleepeth. So he said Lazarus was asleep, but I go that I may awake him out of sleep. So Christ said, I'm going to wake him up. Meaning what? He was going to do what he did to that girl. He was going to call for her spirit to come back, to be risen up. Now watch this. Verse 12. Then said his disciples, Lord, if he sleep, he shall do well. So they didn't understand. They like, man, if he gets some sleep, then he going to be all right, man. Nothing rejuvenates you like a good nap, like some good rest. That's why I said, man, he should do well. Now watch this, verse 13. Howbeit Jesus or Yahweh Shai spake of his death. So Christ spoke of him being dead, not just sleep, not just taking a nap. Now watch this. But they thought that he had spoken of taking of rest in sleep. They thought he was talking about Christ said he was asleep. Then said Jesus or Yahweh Shai unto them, plainly he said, Lazarus is dead. He said, Lazarus is dead. But what did he call him? He called him being sleep. He called it being sleep. He called, when you die, you're at rest. You're sleep. I hope everybody's seeing this. Now, let's jump down to verse 19, and then we're going to read. Yeah, let's jump to 19. And many of the Jews came to Martha and Mary to comfort them concerning their brother, which was Lazarus. Now let's jump to verse 30. Now Jesus, or Yahweh Shai, was not yet come into the town, but was in that place where Martha met him. The Jews then which were with her in the house and comforted her, when they saw Mary, that she rose up hastily and went out following her, saying, she goeth into the grave to weep there. So she was going to the grave to weep for Lazarus, verse 32. Then when Mary was come where Jesus was, or Yahweh Shai was, and saw him, she fell down at his feet, saying unto him, Lord, if thou hast been here, if thou hast been here, my brother had not died. Meaning if he was here, he would have died. Verse 33. When Yahweh Shai therefore saw her weeping, and the Jews also weeping, which came with her, he groaned in the spirit and was troubled. So when he saw this going on, made him groan, he was troubled, and said, where have you laid him? So he's like, where is he at? Where's the body? They said unto him, Lord, come and see. Yahweh Shai, or Jesus, wept. Then said the Jews, behold, how he loved him. And some of them said, could not this man which opened the eyes of the blind have caused that even this man should not have died? Jesus, or Yahweh Shai, therefore again groaning to himself, coming to the grave, it was a cave, and a stone lay upon it. Yahweh Shai said, or Jesus said, take ye away the stone. Martha, the sister of him that was dead, said unto him, Lord, by this time he stinketh, for he had been dead 4 days. Like, man, he been dead for 4 days. The body is decomposing. Rigor mortis is set in. Verse 40. Yahweh Shai, Jesus said unto her, said I not unto thee that if thou wouldest believe, thou wouldest see the glory of God? Then they took away the stone from the place where the dead was laid. And Yahweh Shai, Jesus lifted up his eyes and said, Father, I thank thee that thou hast heard me, and I knew that thou hearest me always. But because of the people which stand by, I said it, that they may believe that thou hast sent me. So what Yahweh Shai is saying, he made a fair speech. He made a show of him talking to the Father so they could see his power and see that he had a connection or a direct line to speak with the Most High. Verse 43, And when he thus had spoken, he cried with a loud voice, Lazarus, come forth. And he that was dead came forth. So when he said Lazarus, come forth, he was calling for Lazarus what? Not his body, because his body was already there, laying in that sepulcher. He was calling for his spirit to come back into his body. That's why verse 44 says, and he that was dead came forth, bound hand and foot with grave clothes, with his burial clothes on, and his face was bound about with a napkin. Yahweh Shai said unto him, loose him and let him go. He said unto them, loose him and let him go. Because what? he was back awake. He was back alive, y'all. I hope everybody's seeing this. When you die, your spirit is at rest. So let's get another one. Let's get 2 Kings chapter 4. We keep proving this throughout the Bible, man. 2 Kings chapter 4. And if y'all got any questions, man, raise your hand in the chat. Or you can text message me your question. Text me your question. 314-482-9110 is my number. So let's get 2 Kings chapter 4 and verse 27. And I say that, man, because this, what I'm going over is hard for people to wrap their mind around because of all the superstitions and stories we've been taught about death. It gets in the way. So here we are in 2 Kings chapter 4, verse 27. It says, "And when she came to the man of God, to the hill, she caught him by the feet. But Gehazi," now this is talking about Elias, y'all, or Elisha, and this woman, her son. This is the context of it. And Gehazi was Elisha's servant. It says, "And when she came to the man of God to the hill, she caught him by the feet. But Gehazi came in to thrust her away. And the man of God," which is Elisha, "said, 'Let her go, let her alone, for her soul is vexed within her. And the Lord had hid it from me and had not told me.'" So he could sense that something was wrong with her. It's like, man, leave her alone. Let her come to me. Verse 28. "Then she said, 'Did I desire a son, my Lord? Did I not say, do not deceive me?'" Because remember, he held up with this woman, this widow woman, who had this son. He held up with her during the famine. And she fed him her last, but turned out to be it wasn't her last. It was enough for the both of them and her son to make it through the drought. Now, verse 29. "Then he said to Gehazi, 'Gird up thy loins and take my staff in thy hand and go thy way. If thou meet any man, salute him not. And if any salute thee, answer him not again. And lay my staff upon the face of the child.' And the mother of the child said, 'As the Lord liveth, and as thy soul liveth, I will not leave thee.' And he arose and followed her. And Gehazi passed on before them and laid the staff upon the face of the child, but there was neither voice nor hearing. Wherefore he went again to meet him and told him, saying, 'The child is not awakened.'" The child is not awakened because this child was what? This child is dead, y'all. The baby was dead. Verse 32. "And when Elisha was coming to the house, behold, the child was dead." You see this? But you see how it made reference in verse 31 to this child being asleep? He said, "The child is not awakened." So when you're dead, you're what? You're asleep. It says, "And laid upon his bed, he went in, therefore, and shut the door upon them twain and prayed unto the Lord." Now, this ain't far-fetched either, y'all, because if you do just a little research, they'll tell you that the closest that you come to death while you're living is when you sleep. That's the closest you come to death is when you sleep, man. So this ain't far-fetched. Because think about it. When you sleep, man, everything slows down. Your heart rate slows down. Your pulse slows down. Your blood flow slows down. Everything's resting. This is how your body rejuvenates and repairs itself when you get the rest. Verse 34. "And he went up and laid upon the child and put his mouth upon his mouth and his eyes upon his eyes and his hands upon his hands, and he stretched himself upon the child, and the flesh of the child waxed warm. Then he returned and walked in the house to and fro and went up and stretched himself upon him, and the child sneezed 7 times, and the child opened his eyes." So he did what? He brought back this child's spirit because this child's spirit was resting. I hope everybody is seeing this, man. Verse 36, "And he called Gehazi and said, call this Shunammite. So he called her. And when she was come in unto him, he said, take up thy son. Then she went in and fell at his feet and bowed herself to the ground and took up her son and went out. You see that he called the son's spirit back because the son's spirit was asleep, y'all. Everybody's seeing this. So now let's get 1 Samuel 28. First Samuel chapter 28 and verse 11. We start at verse 10. And Saul swore to her by the Lord, saying, as the Lord liveth, there shall no punishment happen to thee for this thing. Now what's going on, the backdrop of this story is Saul had put all of what he called people with familiar spirits, what the Most High calls them, he put them out the city. And people that have familiar spirits, these are people that do witchcraft, and they're called, I think they're called mediums, where they can bring spirits back to life. Y'all might have watched the movie, what was it, with Whoopi Goldberg, Ghost. That's how she brought, what was the dude that played it? Damn, what was his name? Patrick Swayze. That's how she brought his spirit back. She used the medium to bring that spirit back. So this is letting you know that that actually happens. All those psychics, tarot card people, that's what they're doing, y'all. It's witchcraft. But anyway, what's going on in this story, Saul was the king. He disguised himself and went to this lady so she could bring back the spirit of Samuel. Now let's chip off what happened, verse 10. And Saul swore to her by the Lord, saying, as the Lord liveth, there shall no punishment happen to thee for this thing. Meaning, nothing bad will happen for you bringing Saul's spirit back. Then said the woman, whom shall I bring up unto thee? Who shall I bring up unto thee? Who should I arise from the dead? What spirit should I conjure to come back? And he said, bring up Samuel. And when the woman saw Samuel, she cried with a loud voice. And the woman spake to Saul, saying, Why hast thou deceived me, for thou art Saul. So she's seen everything. Now, in the previous scriptures we read, when Christ was bringing people back to life, they still had a body to occupy. But during this time, Samuel's body had already deteriorated. So it wasn't his body that this woman and Saul saw. It was his spirit. It says, and the king said unto her, be not afraid, for what sawest thou? And the woman said unto Saul, I saw gods ascending out of the earth. When she said she saw gods ascending out of the earth, she's talking about she's seeing angels ascending out of the earth. Verse 14, and he said unto her, what form is he of? And she said, an old man cometh up. And he is covered with a mantle. And Saul perceived that it was Samuel. And he stooped with his face to the ground and bowed himself. You see this? Now watch this, verse 15. And Samuel said to Saul, why hast thou disquieted me to bring me up? I mean, man, why you wake me from my sleep? He said, disquiet. To be disquiet means to be disturbed from your quietness, from your rest. Why are you waking me up, dude? And Saul answered, I am sore distressed, for the Philistine made war against me, and God has departed from me and answered me no more, neither by prophets nor by dreams. Therefore I have called thee, that thou mayest make known unto me what I shall do. So you're like, man, I called you so you can give me instructions on what to do, how to handle this situation with the Philistines. But the point is, he was what? He was brought back from his rest. His spirit was awakened from resting. So what happens to your spirit? Your spirit is resting. Your spirit is not walking around your spirit is not going into somebody else's body, and it's, they now they got two spirits in them. Your spirit ain't, this ain't Ghostbusters, y'all. We got all these movies in our mind. We got Casper, the Friendly Ghost, Ghostbusters, the movie Ghost, Whoopi Goldberg. We got all these movies in our head, man, all these concepts of what your spirit does after it leaves your body, but none of them are accurate. So what was I at? Verse 15. Now let's get 2 Samuel chapter 7, verse 12. 2 Samuel chapter 7 and verse 12. And it reads, "And when thy days be fulfilled, and thou shalt sleep with thy fathers." So this is the Most High talking to David. He says, "And when thy days be fulfilled, and thou shalt sleep with thy fathers, I will set up thy seed after thee, which shall proceed out of thy bowels, and I will establish his kingdom." So this is the Most High talking to David, letting him know that after you dead, and what's the term he used for dead? "And thou shalt sleep with thy fathers." Meaning what? You're going to be at rest. You're going to be dead. You're going to be sleeping. So what happens to a spirit when it leaves the body? It's sleeping. It's at rest. I hope everybody is seeing this, man. Let's get 1 Kings chapter 11, verse 43. 1 Kings 11, verse 43. And it reads, "And Solomon slept with his father." So we already got an account of David sleeping with his father. Now David's son Solomon is going to sleep with his father, meaning what? He died. Let me read it. It says, "And Solomon slept with his fathers and was buried," see, he's dead, "in the city of David, his father, and Rehoboam, his son, reigned in his stead." I hope everybody's seeing this, man. Now let's get 1 Kings chapter 14 and verse 20. First Kings chapter 14, verse 20. "And the days which Jeroboam reigned were 22 years, and he slept with his father, and Nadab, his son, reigned in his stead." So when you die, man, your spirit is doing what? It's going to sleep. It's going to rest. Same chapter, 1 Kings 14, 31 now. "And Rehoboam," remember, which was Solomon's son, "slept with his fathers." His fathers who? Solomon and David. Slept with their spirits. "And was buried with his fathers in the city of David. And his mother's name was Naamah, an Amoritess, and Abijam, his son, reigned in his stead." I hope everybody's seeing this, man. So what happens to your spirit after it leaves his body? Or your body when you die, your spirit is at rest. I hope everybody is getting the concept and understanding this. This is what happens. Give me a second, y'all. Hold on. All right, y'all, I'm back. Sorry for the quick break. But I hope everybody is getting understanding of what we're going over. So just a small recap before I close it up, because I think this is a good stopping part before we go into the next part of this class. So we do not come back as animals. No, we're not reincarnated into no animals. Broke that down. I hope everybody understands. Because in 1 Corinthians chapter 15, verse 39, it tells us that all flesh is not the same flesh. All right? So that's not happening. Also, we know that the Most High is not the author of confusion. And that will be confusing. That will be very confusing. For me as a man to be reincarnated as a grasshopper. Confusing as hell. Like I said, man, we got a lot of cartoons and mystical books we didn't read as a kid, and folklore in our head about what happens to you, when you happens to your spirit when it comes back. None of that is accurate. So the next part, does my spirit walk around when I die? No. Your spirit is not walking around. Your spirit ain't surfing. Your spirit ain't haunting somebody. None of that's going down, man. Your spirit is truly at rest. That's what's going on when your spirit leaves your body. Brought out countless scriptures to also prove that, man. And if you tune in to any of my teaching or in Mashaba's teaching, with any Mashaba's teaching, and he's my teacher. He's taught me a lot. We definitely beat the hell out of dead horses. So you ain't going to get no one or two scriptures on one topic, man. You're going to at least get 40 to 50 scriptures dealing with the same topic, proving the same point emphatically, just so you can understand, man, and not doubt the word of the Most High. And a lot of us need that. But sadly to say, we'll give that, and a lot of us will still naysay. A lot of people will still say, no, that's not what it's saying. No, 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 you're wrong. That's your interpretation. But we ain't mad, because the scripture also says, let God be true, but every man a liar. And just because they believe don't make the word of the Most High void without effect either. And we also have to understand that the Most High then poured on them the spirit of deep sleep, so it ain't meant for them to get it in the first place. All right, so that's that. And as a matter of fact, I got a little time. Let me go into this definition. Now, I like the definition that Mashaba posted for reproduction. He says, I'm sorry, the definition for reincarnation. And it says reproduction, the act of producing anew. So even with the act of reproducing, that's reincarnation. Wow. Who would have thunk it? It says, matter of fact, I ain't going to read that theological definition. I like this one. It says reproduction. Oop, I'm tripping. I said producing. No, reproduction. Yeah, that's right. Reproduction. The act of producing anew. So making new all over again. And I had a definition too for reincarnate or reincarnation. Or the word reincarnate means to incarnate again. To incarnate again. And the word incarnate means to give a concrete or actual form to. It just basically means to create. So if something's being reincarnated, or to reincarnate means to remake something. I hope everybody's getting that, man. Because the reason this definition is so bad, because you also could say that everything's recycled. Everything's recycled. And we know, like, in recycling, you know, you throw the old plastic away, and then they do whatever they do to it, and they produce new plastic. What we're going to find out is that the Most High has everything on a cycle. Because that's what it means to be recycled. I mean, I'm redoing the cycle. But everything that the Most High created is definitely on a cycle. It gets reincarnated, or it gets remade. And we're going to find out even mankind gets remade. Yes, mankind gets remade or recycled. So, y'all, I think that is a good stopping point. Once again, I want to send shouts out to all the brother schools and give everybody the heads up on Passover going down in H-Town. And thanks for everybody tuning in, man. I hope we got some understanding out of this class. Hopefully I answered some questions for you that you had, you've been pondering over for years or however long. I hope I brought light to those questions. And I want to ask you to tell a friend, to tell a friend, to tell a friend to please tune in to Talk of Power Tuesdays, Talk of Power Tuesdays, Talk of Power Tuesdays every Tuesday. And with that, y'all, I'm going to say shalom.